Welcome to Celebrity Book Club,
a podcast where we read the memoirs of pop culture icons so you don't have to.
I'm Carrie.
And I'm Kara. And today's book is I Don't Know What You Know Me From by Judy Greer.
I did know this title ahead of time. It is a perfect title.
It is.
For one Miss Judy Greer. And I'm hesitantly excited.
That is good. That's a good thing to be. There, I don't know. I'm going to say a sentence that like makes it sound like I'm hating on Judy Greer, but I'm really not. I think she just has like a certain idea of herself that was like formed in a time because like she started working in this time that we talk about in Hollywood all the time. Like, you know, the like mid to late 90s was just probably the worst time to be working in this industry. Maybe not the worst time, but you know, the worst time in like recent.
Well, I don't know. A particularly challenging time.
Yes.
That shaped a lot of people's worldviews for a long time.
Yes. Is a much more concise and accurate way to describe that, which is why Carrie has a master's degree from an Ivy League school.
That she'll be paying off for the rest of her life.
I feel like every time we hang out, you're like, well, I have a master's from Columbia, so.
It does come up a lot. I am working on toning down that part of my brand.
Maybe you've already done it, because I honestly haven't thought about it in months.
Especially because Joe Biden says that that is not worthy of student loan forgiveness. He doesn't think that people with Ivy League educations should get that. I just would be like, talk to me for 10 minutes and you will think that I deserve it. I promise.
Talk to you for 10 minutes, Joe.
Joe, do you realize how many people with Ivy League degrees still go into public service? And I know you say you're going to fix public service loan forgiveness, but you haven't done it yet.
The clock's ticking, Joe.
I'll edit this out if he has by the time this is released.
I really hope you have to do that. I genuinely hope you do. But yes, agreed. Thank you. I think the cultural consciousness in Hollywood at the time that Judy Greer was beginning to work and that pervaded through a lot of her career, which is still ongoing, was toxic in a lot of ways. And I think she has a vision of herself and who she is in relation to Hollywood that I see her as like a very successful actor. And like she admits in this book, she's like, I know I'm successful. I know that like, you know, I have a career that a lot of people would dream of. She's like, but I have never felt like, you know, famous in the way that other people feel famous.
Sure. I also wonder if how much playing the best friend character to incredibly famous women, how much that like shapes the way you look at yourself. If you're constantly getting booked in this role of like, you're the less interesting version of Jennifer Lopez, Katherine Heigl, etc.
Right. Yeah. And which she does go into.
I mean, I would say she's more famous than Katherine Heigl.
Oh, I think so. Because she has a much more broad career.
Yeah. Can I tell you my, I have been thinking about this since you decided you were doing this book.
Another book that we had planned to do at some point, and then because the book we wanted to do this week was out of print and incredibly expensive.
So expensive.
I decided to do this instead, to move it up in the lineup. But go ahead.
Yeah, I've been thinking about Judy Greer since then, and I have this like working theory that she is like a pop culture icon for people who are just starting to explore pop culture, who like maybe come in through the world of rom-coms.
Yeah.
But like knowing Judy Greer as a name is like a cultural touchstone for people who like don't yet have a language for lots of other things. Like it feels a little basic, and that's mean to say, but like the idea that you know who Judy Greer is like, okay, you're well versed in
a very particular.
Yeah. And like, I don't think it's really a negative. It's just like, she's a way in.
Totally.
Like I vividly remember, this is skipping whole segments to go into an about the author, but I vividly remember.
Let's mix it up. Let's do about the author first.
Let's do about the author first.
So this is our podcast, Gary. We can do whatever the fuck we want.
Great, great point. So then let's take it back. Judy Greer first came to me, uh-huh, into my world through the wedding planner.
Of course.
Obviously. At this point, we have now covered 3 stars of the wedding planner.
We really have.
And how many more can we get? I wonder if Joanna Gleason has a book.
I would lose my mind.
Yeah, I bet that would be good. Someone will tell us. And then about 10 years later, I'm sure I saw Judy Greer and other things in the interim, but when 27 Dresses came out, I went to see it in theaters, and the person I was with was like, this is the best rom-com since You've Got Mail. They even got Judy Greer to be in it. And I was like, okay. So Judy Greer was in 27 Dresses, and that was a huge deal to this person I was with. And that's sort of the point I've been thinking about a lot, is like, if you knew rom-coms, you knew who Judy Greer was. Mm-hmm. And that is cool. Like, and she very much like had like a culture of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, not pop culture, cult. She had like cult status.
Oh yeah.
In the rom-com community. And that was very cool. I also think she's steadily very funny. Mm-hmm. She consistently turns out a good performance. And in terms of her current work, she was phenomenal on the 2 seasons of Kidding on Showtime that exist.
Oh.
She plays Jim Carrey's ex-wife on that show, and or separated spouse on that show. And she's so good. And Kidding, wow, is a phenomenal show, and she's wonderful on it. And it lets her do something a little more dramatic, which is very nice. Yeah. So I'm overall pro Judy Greer. I think that I'm glad there's space for her in the world. I'm not gonna say anything. I don't have anything negative to say about
her.
No,
yeah, not
at all. But I also don't have any like
overwhelmingly positive things to say.
I think when I was between the ages of 15 and 20, I would have ridden hard for Judy Greer. Like, I thought she was so good in The Wedding Planner. I loved that character, that like best friend side character for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Judy Greer tended to get booked in a lot of rom-coms written by men. 27 Dresses is not that case. It's written by Aileen Brosh McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that shows that it's a little different. But Judy Greer is a rom-com legend, but she's not heavily featured in a Nancy Meyers or a Nora Ephron film. And I just...
Do you want that for her?
Not that we need gatekeepers in the romantic comedy genre, but we have them. And sometimes I listen to them all the same, and I just go, it's interesting you didn't get booked in those roles. I'm not sure what that means.
No, I get that. I get that.
Kara, what's your experience with Judy Greer, since we're changing the segments around?
I think, honestly, as we have discussed at length many, many times, didn't see a lot of rom-coms until I was older. And so I honestly think the first thing that I ever saw Judy Greer in was Arrested Development.
Oh, shoot. She is on Arrested Development. She's very funny in that.
The last time you'll ever see these. Which I think was like, anytime I see her in something now, in the millisecond before I remember her name, I'm like, oh, it's Kitty.
Sure.
And then in quick succession, after seeing that, you know, Wedding Planner, 27 Dresses, all of the above, I wrote down.
What one. Other ones is she in is also what I'm like, why can I only think of those?
Oh, 13 Going on 30.
Oh, she's great in 13 Going on 30.
Yeah.
Her turn as like a much more sinister character is really lovely. Like, and it gives her something different to do.
Mm-hmm. Than to just be the girl on the other end of the phone with the Ben and Jerry's. Like,
yes. Yes. And I do think that like her roles are interesting in these other ones, but like, I like when she gets to push doing more than just that. But also it is important to remember that she was booking these movies from 97 to 2007. So like, right. That's a particular window of time that we have discussed at length recently.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very specific view of the world. It's a very specific view of quote unquote femininity and womanhood. It's a very, I feel like values during that time were, I talk about this with my roommate sometimes because he recently watched Sex and the City all the way through. And he's like, it's funny how the 90s were like simultaneously, like the late 90s, early 2000s,
yes,
simultaneously very slutty and very repressed at the same time.
Yes.
Like, you were either supposed to be one or the other. You were either supposed to be a Samantha or you were supposed to be a
Charlotte.
Thank you. A Charlotte. And the people who were like sort of in the middle, like the Carrie Bradshaws, were supposed to be like the, where do I fall on the spectrum? Like kind of like that was the everyman.
Yes.
And like gender and femininity were very particular during this
yes.
time that a big chunk of Judy Greer's career happened and the beginning chunk of it. And that's just very interesting to me. I wonder what that must be like.
Two things. One, I've been thinking a lot about Sex and the City recently because of the impending revival. Mm-hmm. I've seen maybe like 5 episodes, but I know the tropes of the characters. And I've spent years assuming I was a Miranda only to realize that I'm probably a Charlotte. And that's deeply upsetting. Like I'm more of a prude than I realize I am.
I think, and again, I think like they're all a bit of a caricature of those types of people. But I could see you as a Charlotte.
Like, I just think
she's also very, okay, Charlotte, who Charlotte actually is was me in college. Charlotte is very honeysuckle.
Yeah. And see, I know,
like, not necessarily like prude, but she's just very idealistic.
Yes. Okay. Like, then she's still freaks. Have that.
She's still freaks, but like, she's very idealistic. Oh,
they all have a lot of sex.
A lot.
I mean, it's the titular role. Sex.
The titular sex.
Yeah. The other thing that I was thinking of is, talking about sort of like the best friend character and this time period. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think, I'm thinking about this quote from Busy Phillips's book that is, she's talking about starting work on Dawson's Creek and going into wardrobe and them pulling clothes for her and being like, oh, well, this fits Katie, but like, I guess we have to size you differently, and making all these comments. And Busy Phillips says in that book, I wanted someone to tell me that I was hot enough to be a WB star, even though I was currently starring on the WB and was hot. Like but I just wanted someone to tell me that. Mm-hmm. And without reading Judy Greer's book, but from what you've said so far, it feels like Judy Greer has fallen into a similar narrative of like, she wanted someone to tell her that she was as
good
big
enough to be,
to, yeah, that she could be the star of it, even though like she's cast in this sort of ancillary role.
Totally. And there is definitely a level of acceptance and thankfulness of that in her book. But there's also a level of frustration that's not internal, but it's like, she's like, I don't understand when people ask me, like, why have you never done a lead role? It's like, I don't think people understand how acting works.
Like, no.
I can't,
you know,
just
what?
Be
you
like,
really should stop turning down those lead opportunities for Jennifer Lopez's best friend.
Exactly. So she's like, that part of it is frustrating.
Well, I think this segues very well into Book in 60 Seconds. So, yes. Kara, you read I Don't Know What You Know Me From by Judy Greer, and I cannot wait to hear about it. So can you tell me what this book is about in 60 seconds or less?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Your time starts now.
Great. This book is one of our first chronological ones we've done in a while. Judy starts talking about her pretty regular life growing up outside of Detroit. She stumbled into acting and really enjoyed it when she was in high school. So eventually she went to school for it in Chicago. She talks about the hard work, but enjoyment that she got out of acting in Chicago and then in LA. She tells us about the important people in her life and the important animals in her life. She talks about some of the fun and not so fun parts of being famous, but not famous. Her frustration with her fans recognizing her, but not recognizing her, i.e. asking her those types of questions that are like, why do you never get big roles?
Sure.
She talks about her life as part of a blended family, that she married into. And then in the final chapter, she reads some of her old diaries and talks about how she doesn't feel like she changed much from the time she was 13 until she met her current husband.
Oh, that's very interesting. I'm excited to hear about that a little bit, too, of like,
I got to this final chapter and I kind of wish that that had been like the through line, because in the final chapter, she's like, in order to start this book, I was reading my old journals and wanted to have that sort of be like the structure and have this be like a current day journal.
Sure.
Of like how I feel about these things. And she was like, but I was reading them, some from when I was 13 and some from when I was 33. And she's like, and it didn't seem like I changed that much until I met her now husband.
That's so interesting.
She was like, at 13, I seemed very emotionally mature. And at 33, I seemed very emotionally immature.
Sure.
And she talks about how she doesn't feel like she has changed in terms of what she wants from life, what she expects from herself, what she expects from other people, even though the picture that she paints of herself is like a very independent person. Like, she moved to LA by herself after college. She knew like one or two other people. She was like renting a place for herself and was successful enough that she has never had another in LA, has never had another job besides acting.
Wow.
In Chicago, she worked a bunch of other jobs while she was like getting an agent and blah, blah, blah. But in LA, she moved and has only ever acted, which I think is awesome and very hard.
There's something incredibly brave about people who are able to just follow their dreams. And like, it's a little naive.
Sure.
But like, there's bravery in that naivete.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Like, there's something very cool about just like either... I don't understand this, but A, not having the shame muscle, or B, being able to turn your shame muscle off. Mm-hmm. Like, I am very impressed by people who just like go for it with stuff. I feel very jealous of people who are like, yeah, I'm just going to do this thing and figure it out. Like, cool. Good for you.
But I mean, like, you did that, Carrie. You did that. You came to New York to go to grad school. And, or to go to teach, and you were like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
And so you stopped, and then you were like, maybe I'll go to grad school. And then you did that, and then you did it. But like, when you got here, you didn't know you were going to do that, you know?
Yeah. I guess there are pivots like, along in a way, the way.
You did that too.
It's still a very safe version of that.
Sure. But I mean, don't discredit yourself.
Yes. You know what? Thanks. As always, your ability to enable me, which is just actually another word for support me, is really great.
Thank you. It's a very fine line, and I walk it with pleasure and ease.
You're like hopscotching over that line every day.
I like to think that I am so supportive that I do at times tend to enabling of everyone in my life.
Yeah. But I think like that's why you have lots of different friends, and you go to the friend you need for whichever thing.
Correct.
Like I don't, when I need to be held accountable for an action, I love you. You're not the person I'm going to for that.
Nope.
When I want to be like, I did something wrong, make me feel better, you're absolutely the person I'm coming to.
Uh-huh. I can convince myself and other people of just about anything.
You truly can.
I can talk myself into and out of almost any decision. And I'm very proud of that.
And you have for me so many times in our friendship.
Thankfully, Judy Greer also has had some great friendships in her life. It's interesting to me, a lot of her, one of the things she's talking about being like famous, or famous, but not famous.
Sure.
Famous. A lot of her very close friends that she talks about don't seem to be Hollywood people, which I think is probably very healthy.
Oh my God. I think that's so cool.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people that we've talked about have like one or two like true blue people who have like been with them from the beginning, or like mm-hmm. are a person they met like at yoga, or, you know,
yeah,
someone who's completely removed from their life, which I think is probably very healthy.
Yeah. And I think it depends on like what level of stardom you are. But for some of those people, they like join their teams. Like,
right.
They bring those people along the way with them. I'm thinking of like Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah.
And then for other people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then for other people, they like stay their periphery friends.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. There's a great chapter in here where she has emailed like three or four of her best friends and is like, I want to do a chapter in my book about what it's like to be Hollywood's best friend's best friend.
Oh, I love that.
So that she's like, write, you know, a paragraph in an email to me about what it's like to be my best friend. Because people are always like, oh, I love you and such. You feel like you would be such a good best friend. Like, what do you really like as a friend? So she has
her friends written,
which I thought was really cute. That is not the chapter I picked for Guess That Chapter, but
that's A-okay.
Do you want to hear what is?
I would. I would love to. I like was like, I don't have any segue skills today.
I'm just ready. I love a segue.
You're on it.
All right. Carrie, I Don't Know What You Know Me From by Judy Greer is 236 pages. At least that's how many ebook pages it was. Folks, this is my first ebook, which I had to do because it would not arrive on time if I had ordered it
Welcome to the team.
So we don't have time to cover the entire thing. So we're going to pick one iconic chapter that stood out the most to me, which means it's time to play Guess That Chapter. I'm going to give you some characters and settings. I didn't do settings. Well, it's LA. So
great.
Okay. Here are the characters. Judy Greer, Matthew McConaughey.
Great, 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 great. All right, all right, all right.
Jennifer Lopez.
Yes.
Heidi Klum. Debra Messing.
Deb?
And Ashton Kutcher.
Oh my God.
I know. I had quite a moment myself.
Okay, so this has to be during the wedding planner.
Uh-huh.
All right, so the characters that are not involved in the wedding planner are Heidi Klum, Deb Messing, and Ashton Kutcher. Okay, my best guess is that this is like an opening night party. Opening night, wrong thing. It's like a premiere party for the wedding planner. And these people are there. Adam Shankman directed the wedding planner, and I can see him having overlap with Will and Grace. Like, I can see that happening. Jennifer Lopez guested on Will and Grace at one point.
She did.
You remember? That's like, that's burning Lady my Virgin brain.
Those are some great, that's a great arc.
It really is.
For Jack, for Karen. Boo, classic J-Lo.
It's burned in my brain. Like, in my soul, that's there.
You know where I got the idea for the On the Six? On the Four. I'm going to keep quoting it. So
great, great. Heidi Klum was married to Seal at the time. Seal knew J-Lo. Ashton Kutcher was everywhere at this time. This feels like it's the punked era. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, did Judy Greer get punked? That's my pitch. Judy Greer got punked and all these people were involved. That's my dream chapter.
I wish that had happened. This the primary thing of this chapter does take place during the wedding planner. And then there's also some other Hollywood stories from that time sprinkled in.
Fantastic.
That all took place in LA. So yes, basically you got it right.
Great.
Let me paint you a word picture.
Please do.
So a very cool thing about working as long as Judy Greer has in as many movies as she has is that she knows pretty much like everyone in Hollywood. And it doesn't seem like she's incredibly close with any of them still, or at least she doesn't talk about it in her book like she is, but she seems to like it that way. And I think I would like it that way as well. This chapter is called Celebrities I've Peed Next To.
Great.
And talks about this aspect of career, which is how she's rubbed shoulders with a lot of famous people. She says she, especially during the time of the wedding planner, like J-Lo was famous, but like obviously like more famous than Judy Greer, but she wasn't like J-Lo.
Different kind of fame back then.
Which Judy Greer talks about. She was like, one time we were in a bathroom together, like waiting to do some press event, or maybe it was even the read through. I think it was the read through of the wedding planner. They were at a hotel ballroom, which I think is so interesting. She valeted her car and went into the bathroom to pee. J-Lo like walked in to pee at the same time behind her. And they had like, you know, chit-chatted and briefly had met, but Judy Greer is like, we were sitting there and we were both going to the bathroom, and she was like, it was very like, not humbling, but she was like, it was very interesting. Like knowing that you were sitting next to someone and being like, this person could like be my real life best friend. Like, I don't even know like what could happen.
Yeah.
And she's like, and that's the experience that I've had with so many celebrities who I've peed next to, quote unquote.
It's a real celebrities, they're just like us moment.
Yes. Although she does joke that there should be a section called celebrities, they're nothing like us. Because she's like, of course, it's so easy to, like we were talking about the other day, like,
yes,
not have the same amount of hours in the day as Beyonce.
Yes, absolutely.
But anyway, some people that she mentions in this chapter, Heidi Klum, she peed next to and was like very nervous and intimidated. Debra Messing, she said, was like very, was more famous than her at the time, but like she didn't feel nervous because Debra Messing felt like very accessible to her.
Okay, Debra Messing also strikes me as, without knowing this, Debra Messing is the kind of woman who talks to you the entire time you're in the bathroom.
I'm like, let me check on that because I'm 90% sure that she says that happens.
Like,
like while you're peeing, yeah.
So Debra Messing is a New York woman in the sense that I don't know where she lives, but she's on the Upper West Side and you run into her at a restaurant and she is in the bathroom and she just starts talking to you. You don't, and the worst part is like, you don't want her to talk to you. Like maybe you have diarrhea. Deb Messing is going to talk to you through the whole thing and tell you everything she's thinking, particularly about politics. And there's no way every time she's in the bathroom, Susan Sarandon's name doesn't come up. It just does.
Oh my God. Okay, she doesn't say that they talked the whole time.
Yeah, I don't need Judy Greer to say it because I also know that it's probably become more and more unhinged in recent years. Like when Deb Messing is in the bathroom, all it takes is one person to go, oh, I loved you in this, and she will let loose. Yes. And you know what? She's probably going to be talking about Hillary Clinton at the Javits Center for the next 25 years that she's in the bathroom.
She probably will be.
As are so many rich New Yorkers on the Upper West Side.
Yes.
You go into any bathroom and you can hear them talking about Hillary Clinton at the Javits Center. Like, I just know it's happening.
If those people die, they're going to respawn in Zabar's.
Honestly, I was thinking, I was like, Zabar's doesn't have a big enough bathroom for that. But otherwise, I would say that she's talking to you at the bathroom at Zabar's. But like, no, that's not happening.
But yes, those are two people who she's like, I was... didn't feel like I had a connection with them, but with Jennifer Lopez, because we were about to do this movie together, she was like hopeful for that moment of, this is like a regular thing that we're doing. Like we're hanging out outside of work, quote unquote. So who just like that literally the bathroom.
Exact level of delusional I would be if I ever used the same bathroom as Jennifer Lopez.
I mean,
like we're hanging out. We're friends now.
Yes. So they pee together. They do the read through. Judy Greer has valeted her car at the hotel and realizes that she doesn't have enough cash in her wallet to pay and tip. And she's like, oh, shit. OK. So she goes to the ATM in the lobby of the hotel. And it's one of her first bigger jobs. She doesn't have enough money in her account. She's like so embarrassed. She's like, well, what am I going to do? Like, I guess I'll walk home. And then like when I get paid in a couple of days, I'll like come back and get my car. No. Like, I don't know. And so she's like standing there like anxiety sweating at the ATM. And she hears somebody go, hey, are you a little short on cash? And she turns around and it's Matthew McConaughey.
You know what? I'm not really pro Matthew McConaughey in any form after our recent pod, but this is incredibly sweet.
Yeah.
And also, he was a different person back then.
This I agree. Is
pre-Lincoln commercial Matthew McConaughey, which
is a turning point.
It's a yeah. And that's the pivotal moment for him is when he booked the Lincoln commercial. So we can like pre-Lincoln Matthew McConaughey.
Okay. Well, he gives her cash to get her car out and she's like so embarrassed. And he's like, please don't worry about it. Like it happens all the time. She was like, I was too embarrassed to give it to him in the makeup trailer the next day. So I like his driver was with him as they were like walking out. And so she was like, so I just paid his driver and was like, please give this to Matthew. Like tell him, thank you, blah, blah, blah. Which I just thought was so, so sweet.
That's so sweet. That's an incredibly moving story too, of like, she books a job. She thinks she's like valeting her car. Like, of course.
She's like, I've done it. Jennifer Lopez is my best friend. And then she doesn't have enough money in her account.
That's everything about that is so sweet.
And she's like, I've always been really overwhelmed by these acts of kindness from celebrities. She's like, even several years later, she and Ashton Kutcher were working on a TV pilot together. And
wild.
They had both had, he was producing, I believe. And she was like one of the leads in the show. And she like mentioned casually on set one day, he was like, so what are you going to do if this gets picked up to series? And she's like, oh, I'll probably like buy my dad a motorcycle because he's always wanted one. And Ashton was like, if we get picked up to series, I will buy your dad a motorcycle. So they get picked up for 7 episodes.
Wow.
Which is all they get picked up for, unfortunately, but you know, better than nothing. And at the upfronts, Ashton's assistant comes over to her and hands her an envelope. And he's like, this is from Ashton. She opens it and it's a picture of a motorcycle. And on the back, it's like, call this number to arrange the like drop off for your dad. So she's like, I was like running through the upfronts, like trying to find Ashton Kutcher. And she's like, and I found him. And I was just standing there like agog with this envelope in my hands of like, it's like, seriously, like what the fuck? And he was like, yeah, I mean, I said I was going to do it and I did it. Like, good for you. Good for us. Like, congratulations. He deserves it. Like, And so she's like, it was one of those moments where the overwhelming kindness of people, even in Hollywood, had made her, who always felt like she was like a little bit on the outside, made her feel like more of an insider.
That's very interesting. Her view of herself is very interesting. It's at the, and I can't, it makes me think of Busy Phillips so much, of these people who are like very much celebrities in their own right.
Yeah.
Still not feeling connected to it. And I think it absolutely has to do with the time that they became famous, all of these things.
Totally.
And I don't know. It's probably like, it's a real grass is always greener situation. And if you are a person with that much drive and has continued working, like obviously you want something more. I just don't personally get it, because to me, that's like the exact right level of fame. Like you can still walk down the street.
Yeah.
You can still do something.
Yeah. And what she says happens to her most of the time, she's like, when people come up to me, it's normally, what do I know you from? I don't know what I know you from. And she says she can usually like profile people and guess what they know her from based on like demographically and
sure,
age wise who they are, which I think is kind of cool.
That's very cool. I bet that gets tiring too, right? Like,
right. To be famous enough to be recognized, but not famous enough to be like, I loved you in blank.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Which again is like that whole feeling like you're in on it, but also not.
The audacity of people, though, to be like, to go up to her and like, tell me why you're famous.
Exactly. Which is like
people are rude.
Kind of what we were talking about the other day of like, why do you need to say hi to this person so bad if it's not just going to be a, hey, I think you're great.
Yeah. You know, that came up a lot in Gabrielle Union's book, of her trying to set boundaries, particularly when she was with her children. Mm-hmm. And because when she's with Dwayne Wade, like, they're mega stars. You see it together. You see them together. You're like, yeah. I'm going to go talk to them. She's like, why? Why when people get their time together too? Like, and that idea of like, tell me why you're famous is
so entitled and weird.
Like if you can't figure out what to go tell them and what to go talk to them about, like, don't talk to them.
No.
Have your thought, pre-plan your thought before you go say hi to someone.
Right. Be like, oh, interesting. I recognize that person. And then look it up on IMDb later and shoot yourself in the foot.
And tell the story of how you walked by someone. Your story isn't that much better from having to stop to talk to them.
No, because then everyone's going to be like, oh, you didn't recognize them? I will always have the moment that I passed Katie Couric on 46th Street. I will always have that. And neither of us acknowledged it.
And you know what? That was probably fine for her to get to walk on 46th Street without someone stopping her.
Yes.
I think about that. I walked by Billy on the Street taping.
Oh, my dream.
It was, they were like about to do an interview and like they were about to, I think it was for a game. Like I think they were about to do a game. It wasn't another famous person, but he was just like very chill, like right before he was about to turn on and like go. And I was like, this is really cool. I'm very glad that I walked past this.
Yeah.
But like, what more do you need?
Yeah.
I can understand why that would like sting for Judy Greer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more so that I'm mad that people are so dumb and ask that question.
Yeah.
And like, but I don't know. To me, she has the exact right amount of fame.
Agreed.
Like she can pay for things. She has only ever had to do this job that she likes doing.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have to go get a secondary job doing something that wasn't fulfilling to her.
Mm-hmm. She also, in terms of her personal life, has, I wouldn't say my dream situation, but like a very unique and awesome situation.
Yeah, talk to me about this blended family situation.
So she met and started dating this guy who had two kids from a previous marriage.
Mm.
He lived out in the suburbs, like not like the valleys, the suburbs, like the suburbs.
Okay.
Like in a different county, like not in LA County, like an hour and a half away. And she had this great house that she had always lived in since she was able to buy a house in LA. Mm-hmm. And like loved it. And it was close to work. And they got engaged. They did like, you know, a weekend at her place, a weekend at his place, a weekend at her place. You know, she met the kids. She met his ex-wife. And because they have kids together, they all sort of have to like coexist and co-parent.
Yes, absolutely.
Everything. But because they live so far away, they each keep their houses. So like they're married, but like there are some nights where they like don't go home to the same house.
That's your dream situation?
No. Marrying someone who already has children is ideal is for me.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But the different houses thing I thought was very interesting and very like modern.
It is very modern.
Yeah. Like I would need to sleep next to that person every night.
I can't. Yeah. It's we were talking offline about codependency earlier and that would not work for me.
No.
Or power to them. But I don't know. Like, yeah, whatever works, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. It was very interesting.
That happens a lot with celebrities. I can't stop talking about Gabrielle Union. I have a feeling that this is now, I'm the official Gabrielle Union correspondent of Celebrity Book Club. But she talks about all the time how, you know, they have houses in different places based on where Dwayne is playing at the time. And like, and they will move to a place for a while, but then they still go to their other, like, when you have enough money that there are multiple houses involved,
yeah,
I guess it makes sense that you don't spend every night together. To me, that is really hard and weird, but yeah. I think that's a real, celebrities aren't like us.
Exactly. Which I think is when she brings it up in the book. She's like, I get that this is weird and that like, it's probably like some frou-frou Hollywood thing to a lot of people. To me, being married to a professional basketball player who frequently travels for work.
Yeah.
That's not weird to me. What's weird to me is that they both live in LA and they have separate houses.
Yes. Yes. Okay. You're right. That's completely different. But there is still a level of like, maybe it's when you have a high pressure job, but specifically if you are involved in a like celebrity style career where people know your face, I think intimacy inherently looks different.
I guess so.
Like, I think you treasure the moments that you get and then you go, it's probably not that different from people who like go and work on like a gas drilling, like who go and do offshore drilling or something.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Like you're gone for a month at a time and you just don't see, like, it feels very, like I'm writing to you from the war.
Yeah.
Like it's so foreign to me, but everybody's different, you know.
Sure.
I'm not gonna yuck someone else's yum. If it works for them, that's fine. It is wild that they have two homes within 2 hours from each other. And
that's what it is for me.
Figure
like,
it out.
I totally get, and like I am in the kind of relationship where frequently jobs happen in other places.
Sure.
But like I don't think that two separate houses with a spouse in the same city. I don't think I could do that.
Yeah, that's super different, but fascinating.
To each their own. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I loved that little tidbit about Matthew McConaughey. I loved that little tidbit about Ashton Kutcher. And it was really interesting to like think about how she sees herself.
I was about to ask you, how is Seal involved? And then I remembered that he wasn't. It was just Heidi Klum. So
Seal's always
I was like,
involved.
Tell me about Seal.
Seal. Remember how he got like a big back tattoo of Heidi Klum?
I do.
They're divorced.
I also, he has a great role in Popstar, Never Stop, Never Stopping. Lonely Island, bro, is a huge part of my brand.
Yes.
Perhaps the straightest thing about me.
How much you love Andy Samberg?
Yeah. And like, Lonely Island, bro, is a type of person, as I learned from seeing them live.
Ooh.
And I want to be clear on two things. One, I did not look my best at that time, but the number of men that were interested in me at Lonely Island Bro concert was quite a lot. Was it because I had a perfect turtleneck and chain outfit? Maybe. But like, those are my people. Men who see comedy and are like, that girl.
The review of them that you just gave was overwhelmingly positive, which I'm sure is true. But in my brain, I was about to go, I feel like the circle of Lonely Island Bros and the circle of the dudes from Promising Young Woman is a circle.
It is closer. Like, I think Lonely Island Bro is almost always the funny, weird guy in the frat who didn't quite fit in.
Uh-huh.
And then they found other funny,
which
weird
is very
guys.
Much your vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like
so your vibe.
You are adjacent to toxic masculinity, but you're
not toxic. Yeah.
You've
experienced
lived in their
it.
World. You've danced with them.
Yeah.
But
you did a study abroad in toxic masculinity. But you don't live there anymore.
So attracted to men who have done a study abroad in toxic masculinity. That's exactly it. And now you reject
half and now you're like a woke
norms. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Well, here's what I would love to do.
What would you love to do?
I would love to spend a little time researching one Miss Judy Greer.
Let's do it.
So that should I ever meet her, I never have to ask her, what do I know you from?
Mama, let's research.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more Celebrity Book Club.
If you have any information regarding the whereabouts of the Ana de Armas cutout, please contact celebritybookpod@gmail.com immediately. She was last spotted in a Pacific Palisades trash can wearing a white shirt and black pants.
Hey friends, Celebrity Book Club has merch now. You can find links to buy shirts, stickers, tote bags, and more on all our socials.
Check it out at celebbookpod on Twitter and Instagram.
Carrie, what did you research?
Well, the first thing that went into my autofill on Google was Judy Greer net worth. So I looked at that. According to celebritynetworth.com, she's worth about $5 million, which to me, a plebe, I was like, that's so low. I will never have money. Never. My net worth is in the negatives. So, yeah, I can't relate, but I was just like, she should have more. Give her more money.
More.
I mean, maybe start with giving like everybody else more first. But then immediately once we solve the student debt crisis, give money to Judy Greer. Second, those are my presidential platform. End student debt. A Judy Greer.
Eat the rich except for Judy Greer.
So I looked up that, and then a couple of weeks ago on ye old twitter.com, there was an incredible quote going on because of the Renaissance, a term coined by Kara Procell.
Yeah, fuck you, vulture.
I do want to say, like, you coined it, but it could have been created from multiple places.
Of course it could have, but I'm just pissed at my funny, hilarious ideas.
That other people sometimes have them.
Yeah, and that they get recognized for them and not me.
Yeah, I get that. The number of tweets I've had that have flopped lately, it's brutal. It's brutal out there for me. But recently on the twitter.com, because of the Renaissance, people have been sharing a lot of interviews by Catherine Hahn. And in this interview, Catherine Hahn is asked, Hollywood likes to put actors in certain lanes. What's your lane? And then Catherine Hahn says, there was certainly a best friend chapter of my life. I was constantly the quirky best friend to various blonde stars. And then America Ferrera is involved in this interview as well. And she says, and you were always the funniest person in the movie. And she says, oh, but those are the parts where you can be. Judy Greer and I both have been playing best friends at the same time, always neck and neck for the same best friend parts. And my husband was like, you guys should do like a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern type movie where it's the best friends. And every so often you see Kate Hudson running around in the background.
I think that would totally, I mean, can we franchise this? Like, that's what I want.
Yes, I absolutely agree. So I just, that interview does segue into my eventual can we franchise this, because I think much like it sounds like has happened to Judy Greer, give her a leading role and just let her do some stuff.
Just let her go off.
Yeah. Let that movie exist, because she can do it. She'll crush it.
Absolutely. I agree.
What did you look up?
I went back to her Wikipedia page because I was like, I know she's in every fucking movie that's ever existed. And here were some that I didn't even mention / forgot that she was in. Not because she was unmemorable, but just because she's been in so many movies that, like,
a breadth of work.
What Women Want, which is that movie where Mel Gibson?
Yeah, where Mel Gibson can hear women's thoughts. It is bad.
It is bad. Helen Hunt is in that movie, right?
Helen Hunt is in that movie. My nemesis.
Your nemesis?
Helen Hunt has been my nemesis ever since she took home the Best Actress Oscar in 1997, when it should have gone to Kate Winslet.
That's true.
It's the same reason I now hate Kathy Bates.
Adaptation, that freaky, the dudes who did Eternal Sunshine, they did that movie about Meryl Streep and she's the orchid lady. She's in that. The Village.
I saw The Village.
Elizabethtown, Californication, which I have seen an embarrassing number amount of times.
Elizabethtown is so bad. Let's take a moment and just talk about how Cameron Crowe made two good movies and has been trying to do anything else. And you know what? I don't even like Jerry Maguire. So for me, he really only made one good movie. And it's the one that is autobiographical. Like, Almost Famous is a perfect movie. And we just keep giving Cameron Crowe a budget and he just blows it every time. Like, stop letting this man make movies.
A fun aside about Jerry Maguire that I just remembered is that, so Judy Greer's like birth certificate name is Judy Evans.
Okay.
Whenever she joined SAG, there was already a Judy Evans who existed and she didn't want to have a middle initial. And so she was like, okay, I'll go by my dad's mom's maiden name, Judy Maguire. So she was like so ready to have this name, Judy Maguire. And then literally the next morning she woke up and there were posters for Jerry Maguire all over town. And she was like, I can't do that. So she went with her mom's maiden name, which is Greer. And also it was her aunt's name, who she was named after, Judy Greer. So.
Wow. What an incredible anecdote, and B, great way to get us back on topic. Next level transitioning from one Kara Procell.
Thank you. Keep going.
Tell me more about Judy Greer's filmography.
Jurassic World, which I think is one of the new Jurassic Parks, which I think I saw.
Yeah, it was the first of the new Jurassic films.
Bryce
we
Dallas
do
Howard.
Not stand by Chris Pratt.
No, nor Bryce Dallas Howard.
Oh, yeah, we cannot stand. We hate most Hollywood redheads.
We really do.
We have a type of woman that we are against here, and they are Alison Brie and the Redheads.
That would be a good name for like a...
That's a kick-ass band name, honestly. Yeah.
Alison Brie and the Redheads. Or like, fuck Alison Brie and the Redheads. Yes, Jurassic World, Ant-Man, which I definitely saw but forgot she was in.
Yeah, in a lot of these, in the Jurassic World and Ant-Man is when she starts playing a mom, which I think this happens to a lot of people as they age, and you see famous women's role type changes, and she went from the best friend to the like distant mother character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, that's a lot. That's a lot for me, and it happens
because she's only like 40.
Correct. And the rate at which women's roles change and men's roles stay exactly the same.
She's like the same age as Chris Pratt, I would assume.
Well, and like the kids are young in it, but
sure. That's the thing though, too, is that's so interesting, is that the age at which people have started having children is higher, is older.
I think it depends. So I often think that, and then I realize that that may just be our social circles.
People that we know.
Yeah.
I guess so. But I feel like it's really normal to have a baby at 30 now.
I would hope so.
And like when my mom had me and she was 30, it was like weird.
Yeah, I get that. And then I saw an incredible tweet somewhat recently from a comedian named Emily Walsh. And she said, now I see women who are 35 get pregnant. And my first thought is babies having babies. And it's so good.
But yeah, as I went through Judy Greer's Wikipedia, I was just, her IMDb, I was just like, this movie, that movie, this movie, that movie.
And a thing that you brought up while we were doing our research was Archer.
Yeah.
Archer. And she has a prolific voice acting career as well.
Yes.
And just Judy Greer stays working, which is a great reason to yet again go, why is her net worth only $5 million? Because she's booked.
How come, Hollywood?
Mm-hmm. Who is negotiating on Judy Greer's behalf? I'll tell you not who's not. Joe Biden.
Oh my God. I literally can't.
Should we play a game?
I think we should. Is it time for 6 Degrees of Don Cheadle?
6 Degrees of Don Cheadle. The greatest game in the world. Donnie Cheeds, my dude. You see how I'm not going to let that go and I'm just going to make that happen.
Donnie Cheadle. I respect it.
Thank you. Of course you do. You support me through literally anything. Classic Hollywood best friend, Kara Procell. So we're going to connect Judy Greer to Don Cheadle in as few steps as possible, or in the most interesting steps as possible. Kara, are you good to go?
I am good. And I got to do a fun one on this.
Oh, great. Because I think mine is simple, but not fun. So I'm excited to hear yours.
I have two options, which happens a lot with Don Cheadle because of his prolific career. But
and well, we have two every person, two people yes. that have been in almost everything coming together. And now we just get to see how we can make them connect. This is a fun one. This is like a working actor's dream.
Yes, it really is. Yeah. Honestly, we won the lottery with this one. So here we go. Judy Greer is in something that I did not mention at any point on this, but that's how prolific her career is. Judy Greer is in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, God.
With Carrie Russell.
Great, great.
Carrie Russell is in Mission Impossible 3 with Tom Cruise. She dies in the first like 20 minutes, but she's in it. Tom Cruise is in Interview with a Vampire with Brad Pitt.
Great.
Brad Pitt, of course, is in the Ocean's films with Don Cheadle.
That's so good. This is the point where I have to pause 6 degrees to remind you that Carrie Russell was taking meetings with Tom Cruise re-Mission Impossible 3 as around the same time that a lot of actresses were, which is also around the same time that he started dating Katie Holmes. And many people believe, true Tom Cruise conspiracy theorists like myself, believe that he was taking meetings regarding Mission Impossible 3 to find his Scientology bride. Carrie Russell was, based on every interview I've seen with her, was way too smart to let that happen to herself. If they made that offer, she would have rejected it in a heartbeat. And based on everything I've seen from Katie Holmes's post-Tom Cruise life, I see how she got involved with him. I'm just saying, I used to think it was all against her will. And I just, between her watercolors and her like pornographic Biden Harris posts on Instagram, I see how she was swept up in Scientology.
That's so interesting. I would also be really interested to know, because Katie Holmes and Carrie Russell have sort of parallel careers.
Yes, they do.
And I would be interested to know if there were certain types of people that Tom and his team like
targeted. Were they all WB darlings? Great question.
People who like were big enough names, but like didn't have as huge of careers as him, who like maybe wanted to like take a step back from it's interesting.
He wanted someone less famous than Nicole, for sure.
For sure. She definitely Angelina'd him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. I feel like they're equivalent. I feel like now she's like way more famous than he is.
I feel like she needs to get off my television.
She does, though. Okay, I'm tired of seeing her beautiful face.
I made this great joke in a text to a friend recently, and now I just have to put it on the air. Please. That I want to see Nicole Kidman for 6 episodes a year. Never yes. more than that. She can have 6 episodes of prestige television a year. She can decide where to... How she wants to dole those out. Does she want a few guest spots? Does she want one leading series? You tell me. But if she shows up for a 7th episode on my television, I will never watch her again. I'm done. I can only handle 6 hours so of Nicole a year.
Big Little Lies was a blessing and a curse. Big Little Lies. Okay. The Tina Fey
changed
thing
television
of-
for the worse.
Worse? I think so. So Tina Fey says Friends is the exception, not the rule. Big Little Lies was the exception, not the rule.
And no one has learned that lesson yet.
No one. Carrie, what's your 6 degrees?
My 6 degrees is a very simple one. Judy Greer plays Paul Rudd's wife in Ant-Man, his ex-wife in Ant-Man. Paul Rudd plays the titular role of Ant-Man, who is an Avenger with one war machine. Played by, at least in the later films, Don Cheadle.
Oh, that's right! I forget he was a replacement. We, as discussed previously, would love to see a Best Friends, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, a la film, starring Judy Greer and Katherine Hahn.
Absolutely. Also, not to completely co-opt the Hahnissance, but in a Judy Greer revival, I would like more roles where she has sort of a menacing undercurrent, yes. right? Like, let Judy Greer be your big bad. Let her be your villain. She can make that work. Like, mm-hmm. we've really skipped a step with women. I saw another great tweet in recent weeks was surrounding Anne Hathaway and Emma Stone recently taking over like pivotal villain roles and how MILF we're losing roles. Out on MILFs. Yes. Those roles belong to MILFs.
They do.
Judy Greer, stop casting her as your polite estranged wife and start casting her as a MILF evil queen. Like,
yes,
that's what I want. I also want a turn for Judy Greer where she's the villain in a children's film. Like,
that would be
let
fun.
Her play a wicked witch, an evil stepmother. Give her some meat to chew on where she's not. Let her play off character. She can obviously do it. She's done so much, but like,
yeah,
she doesn't just have to be Hollywood's best friend.
I wish we were in charge of Judy Greer's career.
So do I. She'd have a lot more than $5 million in the bank, and I'd have 10% of it. All right. Every week, Kara and I play Guess That Chapter, but it's your turn, listeners, to play Guess That Author. I am reading the book for next week, and here are three clues about its author. One, this person has been famous for 6 decades. This person is probably now more famous for their health than for their acting career, though both stories have been prolific in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And this person once voiced a live-action dog.
If you have a guess for next week's author, you can find us at Celeb Book Pod on Twitter and Instagram.
Kara can be found on Twitter and Instagram at _KPRO. That's _KAYPRO.
Carrie can be found on Twitter and Instagram at CFOST Talks A Lot. That's the letter CFOST Talks A Lot.
Thanks for listening to Celebrity Book Club.